time for Off the Wall. Okay, that's about enough of that. Sometimes you just like to sit back and listen to the theme, you know? And would you believe it, I don't even have time to listen to my own theme. So sometimes I just come into the radio station when I'm supposed to be on the air and listen to it then. And then ruin it by talking over it. We'll be right back. Many people ask what this composition is. Well, it's taken from the movie, and I'm not going to pronounce this properly. I'm going to try to say it once off mic so I don't make a fool of myself, and I'll say it the second time on mic. I'll be right back. It didn't work out very well at all. Okay, I'm going to try again. Nagoi Katsi. All right, that's much better than I said the first couple of times, actually. Nagoi Katsi. You know, it's the third in a series of movies that Philip Glass composed the music for. There was Kyanis-Katsi, I have no trouble at all saying that. Pawakatsi, which pieces of made it as the theme to Brain Damage back on this station in the 1990s. And then, ironically enough, the third in a series of films came out in 2002 after a long gap, and that also happened to be the same year that Off the Wall went on the air. And Nagoi Katsi is the name of the film and the name of the album. And it's so nice having the internet to access live on the air, because I can correct myself almost instantly. Off the Wall did not go on the air in 2002. It went on the air in 2003. Don't even know the years of my own shows. But that is the answer to that question, which many people ask us, and I figured it would be nice just to get that out of the way. Okay, a lot of other things we have to get out of the way. Many people wanted to know why we weren't on last week. Well, there's quite a story behind that, and we'll be telling you that story, I think, in greater detail as the show goes on. Suffice to say, it was a very unusual week for me. I imagine it was an unusual week for many people, especially considering all the rain that we got here. What was it, 8 straight days of rain? 9 straight days? It was amazing. It was great. I love things like that. Because it just goes to show you that nature always has the final say in anything. People say, you know, mankind is going to destroy the environment. Not really true. The environment always has the final say. Mankind will destroy mankind's environment, yes. Mankind will make it so that humans cannot exist, and maybe a bunch of other animals as well. But nature always wins in the end. We have Hurricane Wilma, which is making its way towards Florida, last I heard. Wilma, the last named hurricane possible for this year. They actually made it all the way up to W, and apparently there are no X's, Y's, or Z's. So that's it. That means the hurricane season officially ends after Wilma, and any storm that might appear after Wilma legally must be referred to as a blizzard. No? I thought that's what it was. All right. Apparently I misinterpreted that. Oh, okay. I'm seeing a list now of different names. This is really what they're going to do. They're going to name... Okay, they're going to go to the Greek alphabet after Wilma. They're going to go to Hurricane Alpha. Or Tropical Storm Alpha, and then Beta. Oh boy, this is going to be silly. I wonder what happens if they run through that. How many plans do you think they make? How far do they actually take this thing? You know, it's pretty unreal. So yeah, Hurricane Wilma is down there somewhere. Expected to gain strength later this week, and take a path toward the southwestern coast of Florida, near where Hurricane Charley hit last year. One woman says Floridians have... The Associated Press went out and found one woman? I don't understand that. Okay, fine. One woman says Floridians have learned their lesson about preparing and aren't waiting till the last minute anymore. I mean, how much of a more vague quote can you possibly come up with? Some entity someplace expressed optimism at President Bush's failure to complete a sentence. You know, it's... You need people, you need names, you need documentation if you're going to be a news agency, for God's sake, one woman says. I'll bet thousands of newscasters around the country read this word for word, and I'm the only one to be bitching about this right now. And it's true, too. It's true. If I read this right now, word for word, guaranteed you'll turn on the radio and listen to a newscast, probably on a nationwide network someplace, or turn on the television, and you'll see somebody reading the same thing, word for word, because there's no variety. It's all the same. So, okay, I'm going to continue reading this, and I'll try not to get sidetracked. Today, though, it's the Cayman Islands under a hurricane watch. A tropical storm warning is posted there and along the coast of Honduras. As much as 6 inches of rain is expected in the Caymans, southeastern Cuba, Haiti, Honduras, and Jamaica, with up to 12 inches possible in some areas. The National Hurricane Center clocks Wilma's winds at nearly 80 miles per hour, currently a Category 1 storm. That's the wimpy kind. Wilma could grow into a Category 3 by Thursday. Predictions show the storm heading into the Gulf of Mexico by Friday, then making a sharp turn towards Florida. It's cool how they can predict the sharp turns, you know? All right, but we're not off the hook up here. From all the weather we had last week. In Massachusetts... Did anybody know the name of the Massachusetts governor? I didn't. I did not know his name. I assume this is a he. Mitt Romney. What kind of a name is that? Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney. Yeah. Has ordered an emergency inspection of all dams in the state that are considered high risk. Romney says dams are high risk when... quote, there would be a significant loss of life or property, unquote, if they were to break. So a dam that breaks and doesn't kill anybody isn't high risk. How about that? That's a fact of the day. Anyway, an evacuation order is still in effect in Taunton after a dam on the Mill River deteriorated last night. A 6-foot wall of water could gush into the downtown area if there is a breach. Crews have relieved pressure on the wooden dam. Wooden dam, how do you like that? And the water level has fallen. And the mayor of Taunton says there's been no further weakening of the dam. The National Weather Service shows Taunton got more than 7 inches of rain over the weekend. Some 40 dams in the state are considered in poor or unsafe condition. Oh, yeah, nothing but fun. Nothing but weather-related fun. So, yeah, you know, we can spray all sorts of aerosol cans into the air and throw our gum wrappers on the ground. But Mother Nature will hit us with 8 straight days of rain and a whole alphabet full of hurricanes. And an earthquake or two just to make things even more fun. Hasn't been a good year, has it? Well, I guess if you start from last December, it really hasn't been a good year. You had the tsunami then, killing hundreds of thousands of people. You had the horrible earthquake in Kashmir that killed tens of thousands of people. You had the horrors of New Orleans. And, you know, they don't talk about how many people died there. I don't know why. I don't know what the death toll is. I have no idea. It's not talked about. Is it in the thousands? I think it is, but no one's really discussing it for some reason. I'd like to know, not just out of morbid curiosity. I just think we should know how many people actually were killed as a result of... not getting out in time, for whatever reason. All right. All sorts of other interesting things going on, of course, involving homeland security and border protection and things like that. And it got a little more interesting today. Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff. Remember that name. This is somebody you're going to be hearing a lot more from, I predict. He promised today to end the catch-and-release policy that has allowed tens of thousands of non-Mexican illegal aliens to disappear within the United States. Non-Mexican illegals. They're really going all out, labeling certain types of illegal aliens. Return every single illegal entrant, no exceptions, Chertoff said in prepared testimony to a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on proposals to overhaul the immigration system. Chertoff was joined by Labor Secretary Elaine Chao in presenting administration views on the illegal immigrant problem. He said President Bush remains committed to a comprehensive approach, including gaining control of the border, enforcing workplace laws, and establishing a temporary worker program. No doubt so that all the rich people can have their houses cleaned and their lawns mowed without having to panic them about this whole illegal alien nonsense. On Monday, Senator John Cornyn, a Republican of Texas, who also is a leading proponent of changing immigration policy, said the Judiciary Committee, now occupied with Supreme Court nominations and other issues, won't put together an immigration bill until at least January. That would push the politically sensitive issue into an election year, adding another factor of difficulty in getting a bill through Congress. It's amazing to me that this is even something that that is being discussed. It seems like such a non-issue. Yeah, 900,000 Mexicans are caught entering the United States every year. They're returned immediately to Mexico. But other parts of the system have nearly collapsed under the weight of numbers. And Bush today signed a bill boosting border enforcement. He says he's glad a new spending measure will bolster America's borders against illegal immigrants. As if that is the major problem facing us right now. Illegal immigrants are the ones doing the work. And that's something that keeps getting hammered into our heads over and over again. They're doing the jobs that nobody else wants to do. And I think that's sad. That people have to work so hard and be treated so badly. How about, if people come into this country and are willing to do things that nobody else will do, they can become citizens just based on that alone. Why not? It's really hard to find people to cut lawns, to do carpentry work, to do housework. It's really hard to find people to work those menial jobs in malls, all sorts of other places. So if there are people who want to do that, I say, let them. Let them do that. Let them get all the benefits of citizenship. And let's stop panicking ourselves. Oh, my God, the Mexicans are coming. What do you think is going to happen? We might actually get someplace. We might actually start moving ahead because things are getting done. Meanwhile, we continue to move our companies south of the border and outsource as much as possible to all sorts of places, from Ghana to India. When you call any company, whether it be American Express or Verizon, any large company, odds are you're getting somebody in a foreign country being paid much less than you would ever expect an American worker to get paid. The companies are saving a ton of money, and nobody's screaming about them illegally entering another country. It's a one-way street. It works for the companies going into those countries. Doesn't work for the people of those countries wanting to come into our country, because that would be wrong. That would hurt the economy. Well, how about all the third world people who have helped the economy? How come that's never counted? Whole thing is just sad and silly. All right. Let's see. I'm actually filling time here because we're expecting somebody to be in the studio, and hopefully they'll get here soon. But I have some stories to share with you until that moment happens. Including something that I saw in the Times, which really made me angry. There's an article entitled "The Hidden Cost of Documentaries." Yeah. Basically, we're talking about people making films these days. This is the story. This fourth grader had just left his school, was headed home with his mother, and two filmmakers were making a documentary for some reason about this kid. And all of a sudden, his mother's cell phone rang. Now, that doesn't sound like much, does it? But the fact that her cell phone rang and was playing Gonna Fly Now, the theme song from Rocky, that meant that they couldn't use that shot. Even though it was a perfect shot, even though it was everything they wanted, they couldn't use it because they had to now get rights to that tune. Yeah, because a ringtone played, they now had a legal issue. Now, had the ringtone been a common telephone ring, the scene could have dropped into the final edit without a hitch. But EMI Music Publishing, which owns the rights to Gonna Fly Now, was asking the first-time producer for $10,000 to use those 6 seconds. Can you believe that? A ringtone being overheard in a film, they actually have the gall to assume that they can take money from people for that. I mean, how crazy has this gotten? I guess if you pass somebody in the street and they're whistling a tune, if that tune is something that EMI owns, they're going to charge you money for it. What is the logic exactly? Someone please explain it to me. I know all about rights. I know all about intellectual property and things like that. I don't see how any of it ties into this. It's a part of life. It's something that you hear every day. What, if a Mr. Softy truck passes you and you're recording something? Now you have to pay somebody? I mean, it's a great way to get money out of people, isn't it? Why doesn't EMI just go out there and bombard every single street with tunes that they own? That way nobody can film anything without having to pay them some money or do all kinds of horrible editing. Now, this documentary maker originally considered relying on fair use. That allows you to use material without a license when, quote-unquote, the public benefit significantly outweighs the cost or losses to the copyright owner. But her lawyer advised against it. The lawyer said, for your first film, you don't have enough money to fight the music industry. Unbelievable. And this is not an unusual story. This is happening everywhere. Clearance costs, the licensing fees paid to copyright holders for permission to use material like music, archival photographs and film and news clips, can send expenses for filmmakers soaring into the hundreds of thousands of dollars. There's this film called Tarnation, which this guy Jonathan Cowett made for a total of $218. He used a laptop computer to edit the thing. Interesting story about a young man's relationship with his mentally ill mother. $218. Now, after a distributor picked it up and improved the quality with some post-production editing and cleared some music rights, the cost came to more than $460,000, and the clearance expenses were about half the total. You see, we got a problem here. This is stifling creativity like you would not believe. And we need to think of some creative ways to get around this, or to just challenge it, to not be afraid, to not talk to lawyers and have them tell you, no, you're better off just playing the game. Because the game is not fair. The game is wrong. The game is utterly wrong. Now, it's one thing to take a bit of art, like music is, like it used to be anyway, and claim it as your own. That's wrong. We all know that's wrong. But to have something in the background, or to have something as sort of a theme that you might use for some other purpose, a purpose other than which it was intended, but not claiming it as your own. That kind of thing should be encouraged, not forbidden. I mean, you can't even have people singing happy birthday without somebody coming after you, saying, are you sure you have the rights to that? I mean, that alone has to tell you that there is a certain sickness loose here. Ten years ago, listen to this, the filmmaker Steve James paid $5,000 to include the song Happy Birthday in Hoop Dreams, the 1994 documentary that followed two Chicago basketball players through high school. One memorable scene portrayed a young man's 18th birthday as the family sang and his mom baked him a cake. It was an important scene. There was some amazement that Arthur had made it to 18, and of course, we wanted to keep that in there. So they had to, if they wanted to sing Happy Birthday, they're the ones singing it too. They had to pay $5,000 just to include that scene. It's crazy. It's absolutely insane. But it's also known as reality. And reality is a horrible thing sometimes. And, you know, I just see this happening more and more. There was this great documentary series in the 1980s, I believe, called Eyes on the Prize. And you may not have seen that recently, and the reason you haven't seen it is because all the rights have expired, and there are so many different kinds of rights. There are film rights, there are music rights, still photographs, and they just have not had the money to renew the rights. Yeah, you can get the rights, but then you have to renew the rights. And so a great documentary series like Eyes on the Prize has not been seen for years. It's never been released on DVD because of this. Who benefits from that? Who benefits? One of the greatest TV shows of all time, WKRP in Cincinnati. Yeah. That show, when it was released on DVD, was completely destroyed. Because they didn't have the rights to use the music. The music that they were playing in the radio station. They didn't have those rights. So they replaced it with Muzak-sounding music, which doesn't make any sense when you're doing something about a radio station. Again, who benefits from this? Basically, a TV show is destroyed. A really good TV show is destroyed as a result of greed. And it's nothing more than that. It's nothing more than greed. So I guess what we have to do is be aware of this and complain about it as much as possible and insist that we not have to live by these crazy rules, because they are crazy rules. The rules will get crazier and crazier as long as you let them. You know, there'll be a lawyer running after you in the street if you whistle a tune that's owned by EMI, okay? And they'll insist on payment on the spot if you let them, all right? But if everybody just doesn't obey this law, this rule, this craziness, if everybody makes as many films as they feel like making and using music in all sorts of different ways, remixing, using things in completely opposite ways than they were originally intended, being creative yourself with things that are out there, well, they're going to have to spend an awful lot of time running after people, and it'll make the sharing music fiasco pale by comparison. All right, that's something that... Hey, our special guest is here, Rob Franza. How you doing?
Hello, Emmanuel.
How you doing?
I suppose I'm okay. Doesn't sound too convincing, I guess.
Well, but... no, you look fine. You know, we've been through a lot in the last week, and I was saving the story actually until you got here because. Well, there's so many things I probably will have forgotten in when I try to tell the folks what happened last week when I don't know what was on the air, but this show certainly was not. And in fact, you might have also noticed that I wasn't around for Off the Hook the day after. And in fact, I won't be around for Off the Hook the next 2 weeks because we're preempted, but that's a whole other thing. But yeah, I had a really kind of weird thing happen to me last week before the show. I guess it was around 4 o'clock in the afternoon where I was doing my usual thing, preparing the program. And all of a sudden, I just had this really, really weird feeling, kind of a little bit dizzy, I guess. And I was looking at various things that were around the room I was in, like mail crates, for instance, that say United States Postal Service on them. I have them legally. Don't worry about that. But I could not read them. I was looking at these mail crates and all that stuff. I was looking at the words, and they weren't making sense to me. And I'm like, whoa, what's going on here? This is awfully strange. And I sort of got away from the computer a little bit and wandered around, and it was something that was continuing. So I called a friend of mine, and I said, hey, what's going on here? Do you have any idea what's happening? Have you ever heard of this condition before? And at first, my friend told me, you know, just relax a little bit, which probably was very good advice at the time. But even while talking to my friend, I realized I was using the wrong word sometimes. I would, like, you know, say something that didn't really fit in the sentence. And I was typing an instant message to somebody, and same thing was happening there. So a bunch of people sort of reached the conclusion at the same time, Manuel, get yourself to the hospital, have this checked out, see what's going on, because that does sound kind of bizarre and weird, and sounds like you might even be having a stroke. And, you know, that was awfully sobering words to hear. So I actually called, I called Chris Crowley, and he called you, Rob.
Yeah.
Because Chris was on the train heading back from Manhattan.
He was in Forest Hills when he spoke with me.
Yeah, and you were much closer. So then
St. James.
You called me and headed on over, and you actually brought me into the ER.
Yes.
That was kind of weird.
Well, it was probably weirder for you than for me, but I was, you know, I had heard from Chris secondhand, you know, what you had told him. And I was concerned about what was going on. And when I originally spoke with Chris, he was just asking me to call you up just to, you know, check on you and try to get a sense of what was going on. But by the time I spoke with you, I think you were ready to go off to the hospital without waiting for him to come around.
Well, the thing is, you know, I was able to drive myself, but everybody was telling me, don't do that, because, you know, we didn't know what was going on. And, you know, I was listening. I figured, yeah, there's no point tempting fate here. I don't know what that was all about that just happened to me. So best thing to do is just go in, describe the symptoms, have people check you out that know what they're doing. And so that's what we did. We went over to University Hospital here at Stony Brook. And they asked me all kinds of questions. Didn't keep me waiting too long, really. There were some people there.
Triage people tend to, you know, get those who need help pretty quickly.
Yeah, there were some people there who had been waiting a long time. Remember the guy in the gurney?
He had a long day.
I guess kind of elderly guy. He was complaining that he'd been there since 9 a.m, and they had him in the hallway. He was on a bed in the hallway because there were no rooms.
Yeah,
it was like Bangladesh. Just everybody in the hallway, and, you know, he's basically just complaining about the fact that nothing seems to be getting done. And then all of a sudden he got quiet. Why was that exactly?
Oh, that was a shot of morphine.
Shot of morphine. He was out like a light, and looked kind of content too.
They seem to be offering those to just about everyone in the ER.
If you complain, you get some morphine, and I guess that works out.
I heard the word morphine with at least two or three other patients that were also out in the hallway.
Uh-huh.
Maybe that's the way to, you know, keep the hallway crowd under control.
Well, I figured, you know, I'd be out of there, you know, in a couple of hours. You know, maybe by midnight at most. I was trying to figure out where I could get food and what places would close when, you know, and one by one, all my options started to be eliminated.
Well, we got there when? About 6:30 or so?
Around then, yeah. Right in the middle of this show, by the way.
Right.
Then, you know, I talked to a whole bunch of different doctors and neurologists and people like that. And then came the words I've never heard in my life before, the words that I hoped I would never hear. In fact, I had just been talking to you earlier about how I'd never even been to a hospital, except for giving blood and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
They said, we're going to admit you. And boy, you know, just hearing that, it's a smack in the face, really. You're going to admit me? My God, am I dying? What's happening here? I'm going to go to the hospital for the first time in my life. I'm going to sleep in this place? What's
in the hallway, no less?
In the hallway, who knows what's going to happen? I've heard all kinds of horror stories about hospitals. They steal your blood. They do all kinds of things.
Amputate the wrong leg.
And what are you basing this on? You know, just my description. Don't listen to me. I don't know what I'm talking about. You know, because all the tests so far, they gave me a CAT scan, they gave me an MRI, everything looked fine. You know, but they were troubled by my description. Literally, that was what worried them. They wanted to check everything out, and you know, there was a time there where I was sort of considering not doing that just then, and they were kind of adamant, weren't they?
Well, you were kind of adamant, I think.
Well, I was adamant because I had so many things to do, you know? So many things I had planned. I had people coming to visit me. I had a fundraiser on BAI the next day. I had all sorts of things. And to just have this drop out of nowhere and with no end date in sight, yeah, I resisted.
Well, you know, they were pretty certain that it was the best move for you. They wanted to watch you and, you know, mm-hmm. be able to observe you and do more tests. And, you know, what can you say when they, you know, when the entire emergency room staff is
they lined up like that and prevented me from going down the hallway. It was like a defense wall. No, they gave some pretty good compelling arguments. And I said, okay, I guess this is one more experience I got to go through. And so, I got checked in.
And that was about maybe 1 o'clock in the morning by the time they told you they wanted to admit you.
Yeah, of course, they didn't have any rooms. So, yeah. You know, they tell you they want to admit you and they don't have any rooms. So they kept me downstairs in this little ER room, I guess, which I discovered had a TV set. It was kind of like a folded TV set, and I found that and was able to actually, you know, amuse myself for a little while until the infomercials came on. I just sort of got bored. But they finally got me into a real room in the hospital in the, it was actually the stroke unit. It looked so horrible. I was in this unit that didn't allow more than two people at once. It was for, you know, careful monitoring of people. And I honestly didn't feel like there was that much wrong with me, you know, just the usual. But they brought me up there, and whole day went by, all kinds of tests and things like that. And I wound up staying from Tuesday until Thursday afternoon. And then I went back again today for one final test. They were going to give me this test on Thursday, but since I wanted to get out that afternoon, I asked if I could do it as an outpatient, and they said, fine. It's called I'm going to pronounce this wrong, too. How do you say that damn word?
Transesophageal.
That's the word. Transesophageal. I couldn't do that. Transesophageal echocardiogram. That's what I got. That's where they take a camera.
Wow.
And they lower it down your throat into your esophagus so that they can see the heart from there and take pictures of the heart.
Wait, now, how big is this camera?
Well, you know, I didn't ask that until after it was over because I didn't feel like thinking about that. You know, I had this to look forward to all weekend long, and it was really kind of frightening. But I would say it's probably about as thick as a magic marker. And,
wow.
And there's a cable that follows it that's about as thick as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they lower that down your throat. Of course, they give you all kinds of things first. They give you...
Muscle relaxants,
you know, suppress the gag reflex, mm-hmm. This sort of Novocaine type spray that they give you to keep your throat from hurting.
But you didn't get general anesthesia.
No, and I didn't want it either. I didn't want to be knocked out. I wanted to be conscious and see what was happening. And I got to say, you know, everything that happened in that place, in that hospital, was very well explained. They did exactly what they said they were going to do. they answer all your questions. There's no mysteries, and I was made to feel comfortable the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even while I was waiting for a room, everybody was extremely helpful, you know, sympathetic, whatever you needed, and it was just as far as being in hospitals, I certainly don't want to do that, but if I had to, that's the kind of experience I would like to have, where people are, you know, professional. And are able to communicate with you.
What sort of room did this procedure occur in?
This took place in, it was actually called the Heart Center. It's a new facility they have where they do all kinds of heart things, non-invasive, invasive. And this was pretty much a run-of-the-mill thing for them.
Right.
You know, they kind of just do this sort of thing every day.
It was like a doctor's office sort of examination room, or it was more elaborate than that?
It was more elaborate. There were lots and lots of rooms, and people were having all sorts of different things done. And of course, they wheel you off to a different place to actually get the procedure done, which I guess is more private. And, you know, the whole thing took about a half hour, you know, where they were down there taking pictures. I asked for copies of the pictures. Hopefully I'll get those. And the purpose of this is to look for anything in your heart that might add clots that could cause strokes. Like, for instance, everybody's born with a little tiny hole that usually seals up. But about, I think, 20% of the people, it doesn't seal up. It doesn't usually cause a problem, but people who have strokes, it could be a big problem. So it's something that they look for. So anyway, they went in there, took their pictures, came out, and didn't find anything unusual. You know, to this day, I don't... It's really weird.
Can we back up one sec? How is it that the camera, which is in your esophagus, can actually see your heart?
Apparently, there's line of sight from the esophagus to the heart. I didn't know this. Believe me, when I get home, I'm going to call up a map of the human body and see where everything is. Mm-hmm. Because, honestly, I don't know where my spleen is. Do you know where a spleen is? People are always losing their spleens in car accidents. I don't know why the spleen is always the first thing to go, but it does. And I don't know where it is. I know it's got something to do with bile. All right? It deals with that.
I don't know about that.
Really?
All right. Maybe your gallbladder.
Well, I thought maybe they worked hand in hand.
The gallbladder seemed to be the common thread of all the folks that got stuck in the hallway of the emergency room. Everybody seemed to be suffering from gallbladder ailments.
Yeah, we had like a gallbladder gang.
Yeah.
They all had to drink this horrible fluid, right? And
they
all got morphine. Yes. And there I was just sitting around waiting for someone to tell me what was going on with
Nevertheless.
Me. Nevertheless. But, you know, it's people say, you know, you had a TIA, which is a mini stroke. But they can't be sure. They can't be sure because there's no evidence to suggest it. You know, so it's just awfully weird. It's awfully weird. It could have just been disorientation or something. But I'm glad I got it checked out. I feel like I've finally gotten that President Bush checkup. You see, things like that. I'm saying check out instead of check up.
Well, that's
what
very
I'm doing.
Much like President Bush.
Oh, my God. Do you think that could be happening to me? Oh, wow. That's worse than anything. Oh, yeah. Maybe he's having all kinds of mini strokes all the time.
Possibly.
It's certainly possible. You know, when I was in the hospital, though, I got moved to a room at one point. First I was in a room by myself, then I got moved to a room with a roommate. It was this guy who was like in his 30s, and he had just been diagnosed with MS.
It's terrible.
It's terrible. It really is. But you would never have known that listening to him. I got in there while he was on the phone with somebody talking to his doctors. And this guy just wanted to know everything there was to know about the disease and about how he could fight it.
Mm-hmm.
And how it was not going to affect his life, his quality of life at all. And I had never seen anybody tackle something with such passion and learn so much about something. He had people coming and going for the entire time I was there, and he was on the phone constantly with his friends and relatives. And I have to say, you know, it was more of a celebration than anything. Everybody was you know,
rallying behind
him, but there was no feeling that this poor guy is a victim. He wasn't a victim because it was obvious to me that he was going to conquer this. And knowing the way he described it, he knew something was wrong with him for the last 15 years. All right. And finding out what it was, that's what he called a blessing. Knowing what it was, because now he knew how to deal with it. Now mm-hmm. he knew how to handle it, you know.
And over that 15 years, his doctors were unable to
They were unable to figure it out.
Really?
They were unable to figure it out. And finally, what happened to him was his entire lower half became numb. Yeah. I mean, he could still walk, but he just couldn't feel.
Wow.
And they put him on some kind of steroid or something, and it was coming back. He had all kinds of lesions on his brain that they found in the MRI. These don't necessarily mean anything bad. I mean, it's common in MS patients that kind of thing happens. It's also common in MS patients that they live a long, full life and mm-hmm. the disease doesn't cripple them. And I think that especially happens when you have that attitude. I think attitude is a lot.
Counts for an awful
lot.
Yeah,
I really do. If you're a victim, if you sort of lie down and say, you know,
this is the end.
this is going to, you know, destroy my life, it will. It already has if you reach that conclusion. But if you have the spirit to keep going and to fight it and to learn and to know everything about it, You know, that's such a major step that I really think you know, that will make the difference right there. So, you know, just seeing that guy was so inspirational. I wonder, you know, in my life, so many things happen seemingly at random, but almost for a reason, you know? You meet people at a certain point in your life, and those people give you something so valuable that you wonder how you ever could have gone anywhere without it. Mm-hmm. And you sort of come to the conclusion that there are certain people in the world that you're destined to meet, you know, that are there to give you something. Like, and it's not just people, like this place, USB. This is one of the places I was destined to be at. BAI, another place. 2600, another place. And so many people involved along the way.
You know, suppose that this gentleman was another example.
Hearing something like that definitely changed me. Mm-hmm. You know, hearing how somebody can react to something that I would find devastating. And I'm a big baby as far as these things go. You know, I prick my finger and it's the end of the world. So, seeing how somebody can stand up courageously to something like this and make it, like, not a joyous occasion, but certainly something that that will make you live life to the fullest and not be crippled by it by any stretch of the imagination. And just seeing how people rallied behind him, too, made me realize that this was nothing unusual for this guy. So, yeah, that, I think, was one of the things I got out of this whole little adventure of mine.
But you got no diagnosis of any sort, did you?
Not really. They're basically saying, based on my description, it could have been a mini stroke, based on my description. But, you know, I'm not good at describing things. I'm really not. You know, maybe it was just getting up too soon and low blood pressure or something, just dizziness. I don't know. But it's good to know that all the things that do lead to that kind of condition seem to be fine. So, you know, I'll just continue to take care of myself, or maybe I'll start taking better care of myself. You know, as you say, diet isn't a very important thing, and, you know, that's something to look at. I urge everybody to take care of yourselves. Don't smoke. Stupid thing to do.
Listen to Natural Alternatives on WUSB Fridays at 6 o'clock.
That's right.
That's a great place to start.
It certainly is. So that was why this show was not on last week. Good enough excuse. It's the first time ever that I called in.
Did you have a note from your doctor?
Actually, I might. But, you know, usually I'm almost always, you know, here for my shows. On the rare occasions I can't make it, I find somebody to fill in. This was one of the times where I just had to call in and say, I can't come in and I can't do anything else. And I couldn't say more than that. I didn't want to say more than that because I was too scared as to what was happening with me. So I just basically had to cut the phone call short. I don't know who I talked to on the phone. I'm sorry to whoever that was. I just said, well, I can't come in today. It's just not happening. And hung up the phone. That was it. And, you know, we survived. And I think that's something else that I sort of got out of this. Those things that, you know, you're convinced you have to do, you know, when it comes to it, you can just back away for a little bit and the world will continue. The world will go on, you know. If you have to be somewhere, you have to meet somebody, you
let it go.
You can let it go, yeah. You can do something else and you'll recover in more ways than one. You know something else I noticed? This is interesting. Today, when I was having that whole heart thing done, I didn't see a single male doctor or male nurse. They were all female.
Really?
Isn't that something?
That's kind of odd, I would say.
Well, I don't know. I mean, everybody, in fact, that was probably the case throughout most of the time I was in the hospital. Most of the doctors were female.
Well, it wasn't the case on the emergency ward on Tuesday night. There were
okay, yeah, down there it was more mixed, yeah. but upstairs where the actual doctoring takes place. And I was kind of surprised by that. I mean, you know, I thought
what are the
it was,
odds?
I thought, you know, it was, I mean, I watch ER, and, you know, things are never the way they are on TV, never. They don't have people running around and all this, like, you know, drama happening. It's, you know, people walk slowly. There's, you know, trivial conversations going on that don't mean anything to anybody. And there's always morbidly obese people working as basically orderlies and ambulance drivers and things like that. I don't know why that is, but it's just
many things about the healthcare sector that I don't understand. So
yeah,
I can't really help you on that one.
You had an adventure right after my adventure. This is fascinating. Now, Rob, you stuck by me that whole night. You brought me food. You went out to Mario's. You got me all this great Italian food. That really made a lot of enemies for me in the emergency room because I had, you know, eggplant parmesan, I had salad, I had spaghetti, and I kept it all to myself.
Everybody could smell it.
Everybody could smell it. Yeah. It was amazing because they weren't feeding me anything. They didn't give me any food because I wasn't checked in yet. As soon as I got checked in, I got food. You brought me there and you stayed, you know, the whole night. And that I want to thank all my other friends, too, who have been calling and writing and not harassing me for the things I'm supposed to be doing, although I can do them now. It really does sort of make you realize how important those things are. But, okay, so Thursday, I leave the hospital. Thursday afternoon, yeah. I leave. And then what happens to you?
Well, I made a return visit very early on Saturday morning. And I traveled as the star passenger in an ambulance. I was home, awake. Well, for me, it was late Friday night, about 4:30.
4:30 in the morning. Okay,
yeah.
Those are my hours.
And I was laying down on the couch, kind of just editing some mini discs, actually. And I suppose, make a long story short, I started to have a panic attack, which I've never had before.
Oh, you've never had one before?
No.
Oh, there's something.
And although several close family members of mine have had quite a number of them, so it was all very new and very frightening to me, and it involved very rapid and disturbing heartbeat, as well as some lightheadedness and dizziness, and my limbs felt very heavy, and my legs felt like noodles. And
you see, I can give myself that any time. I can give myself a panic attack on command. If you think too much about the wrong things, or think that your head is too heavy, or think that your legs are like string beans or whatever,
yeah. I was certainly overtired. Mm-hmm. My sleep habits have really developed in the wrong direction. it didn't help that I was, up very late on Tuesday night into Wednesday morning after, getting back from the hospital, during your episode. And the next night, something else kept me up very late. So anyway, I needed to be in bed hours before this thing occurred. And so I basically called my sister and just kind of spoke with her for a while and started feeling much better and decided I would just go off to bed. But it returned. It came back in a second wave, and it was just as intense.
Wow.
And I got very nervous at that point and decided I needed to go off to the emergency room myself. So I didn't want to drive. I didn't want to wait.
And you didn't call me. I can't believe you didn't call me.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, come on. It's perfect symmetry.
Yeah, except for waiting for you to get to me, which would be about a half-hour drive,
in a smart car, I can get there really fast.
That wasn't going to really help my situation. And I couldn't drive myself because I was, worried that I might not be able to do that. So the ambulance arrived, and after some to-do, we went off to the hospital.
To-do? What to-do?
Well, I'm very grateful for the ambulance, the services, afforded me by the EMTs, and I don't really want to say much more than that.
There was a little confusion, perhaps?
Well, there was some confusion. We didn't move as quickly as I hoped we would.
They dragged their asses, you're saying?
Well, no, I'm not saying that. I think that they probably have a protocol that they follow, and I was just very anxious to be heading towards the hospital, and they were very anxious to kind of, do an EKG and, just get my vitals and stabilize me, as they said.
And they couldn't do that and drive at the same time?
Apparently not. Well, I suppose the thing that kept them from moving most was they wanted to put an IV in my arm, which I actually refused, and that was enough, I guess, to get the driver moving. So essentially, we got to the hospital, somewhere close to an hour after I called,
Okay, wow.
And pretty much the whole time, these waves of symptoms were coming and going. Mm-hmm. And when they were there, they were. I really was, you know, taking notice. I mean, I didn't really know what the condition of my heart or, you know, other major organs were. So I, you know, I was very concerned and very kind of preoccupied.
Uh-huh.
And I wasn't feeling very well.
Yeah.
So I also was taken to Stony Brook.
Mm-hmm.
And was brought into an acute care portion of the emergency room, which...
Yeah, they keep opening these new sections that you've never seen before.
Yeah. I had never been... I'd been to the emergency room at Stony Brook numerous times. I've never seen this wing of the emergency ward. But I was also very impressed with the level of care that I received, mm-hmm. I have to say. And
it's not a commercial for Stony Brook or anything like that, because we could go on about the bad things too.
You know, they were just great people in there, and they were very comforting
and that's the thing.
Inspired,
you said that when you spoke to your sister, you felt much better.
Yeah,
that does so much. Just speaking to people on the phone, they can calm you down. And you know, it reminds me of the time I took LSD. Okay, and you know, it's not an endorsement for LSD, but it's just a life experience that I was panicking. But I was able to be talked to by people who were with me, who were able to calm me down, and then I realized I could calm myself down. I could just think positive things to myself, and I would not panic. So I was able to carry that along to this experience as well. But it was also good just to be able to call people on the phone and have them kind of, you know, talk sense to me. Like, for instance, one of the things I was worried about was one of the complications for the procedure I had today was tearing of the esophagus, and I really didn't want that to happen. But one of my friends said to me, you know, if you're going to have your esophagus torn, what better place than sitting on the table there while they're messing with you?
And they could just fix it right up.
Exactly.
Right after they tear it up.
So, Rob, tell us how
well,
things ended.
Well, yeah, I don't know what time we've got.
We have like 1 minute.
Yeah,
so
okay, essentially, my symptoms subsided fairly soon after I got settled into the room that they put me in. You know, they took some blood and they took a chest x-ray and, you know, hooked me up to the heart monitor, and by the time all of that got done, I was feeling much better, and they let me leave the hospital within 5 or 6 hours after the results came back. Everything was negative. They were a little leery about letting me go without a stress test, because I've never had one before, but I will be getting one in a few days, and you know, so far I'm chalking it up to panic attack. But I'll find out on Friday when I get a nuclear, or is that nuclear? I'm getting a nuclear stress test
right on
Friday, and an echocardiogram to just you know, rule out any heart problems.
See, folks, this is what you have to look forward to as we get older. We're just going to be talking about our health problems from
from here on in.
Yeah, but we seem to be fine for now, and no need to panic or anything like that. It was an adventure.
Interesting week.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I want to go out with Mr. Edison's public service announcement here, because Mr. Edison does a show here at this radio station, and he recently went through some health issues of his own, and I got to tell you, the guy inspires me so much.
Another inspirational story.
Yeah, and it's important to know people like this, to hear what they have to say, and to...
attitude is everything, as you said.
Exactly. He has the same spirit as the guy that I was in the hospital room with. So we're going to close out with that, and we'll be back again next week with another exciting edition of Off the Wall, hopefully not talking about our health issues, but who knows? Who knows what will come up? See you next week. Good night.
I'm Mr. Edison, and I have cancer. Although serious, it was not detected by a standard exam, or by x-ray, or by blood test, or by a CAT scan. It was discovered by a colonoscopy. I know lots of people who put off this standard procedure because of perceived discomfort or embarrassment, or because it takes up important time, or any number of poor excuses. Undetected, the cancer that I have could have easily spread throughout my body. I feel no discomfort, I feel no pain. Thankfully, because of early detection, I have a fighting chance of survival, and here I didn't even know my life was threatened. All because I had a colonoscopy. This message is not coming from the AMA, or the Cancer Research Institute, or the United Way. It comes from me, so that you might be able to save your own life. What are you waiting for?